Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Hey, guess what? I want to let you know about a We Mentor mini lab. It's going to happen. It's locally. So it's in St. Louis Park at the Talent Performance Group, 5891 Cedar Lake Road. And we're going to be focusing on the yin and yang of increasing revenue in today's economy. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's $79. So we're going to focus on cleaning up and clearing out some things in the sales process that you don't need in your business anymore. We're going to find out what's going on and what's changing. What if you could leverage your current situation and you can make more money? What wows? How can you test your ideas? And what will work? How can you co-create a customer process that will look different than you have been doing business in the past? And Rick Macias of the Sales Board, he's got a sales action technique that he uses, and he's going to help us help you with upscaling your sales process. So we're going to look at what's your current sales cycle. We're going to take a look at what if you did a sales process that figured out your sales cycle, your communication, and you map 5 steps in the sales cycle that you could manage and test and refine, and how do you act and function within the sales process. So anyways, if you're interested, if you're local, I mean, you can fly in for this too, but if you're local and you'd really like to learn more about the yin and yang of increasing your revenue in today's economy, especially if you're feeling like you're a bit behind and you want to get updated on what are the technologies that are working and how is social media playing into how we traditionally do sales. So I hope you can join us for that. All right. If you can, shoot me an email, nancy@wementor.com, and I will respond and get you on the list and make sure you include your phone number so I can call you back and talk to you in person. All right. We are so lucky to have Annette Rondano in the studio. Hey, Annette.
Hey, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Well, Annette opened the Great Metropolitan Back Rub Company in 1995 in the hopes of providing Twin Cities bodywork professionals a place to gain hands-on experience and make a good living while building the relationships needed to establish themselves as professionals in the field of therapeutic bodywork. Annette saw bodywork as fundamentally relationship-based and wanted to grow a business that would honor the deep relationships that bodywork requires in order for those giving and receiving bodywork to get the most from their time, money, and effort. And since its inception decades ago, the Great Metropolitan Back Rub has become a cherished regular destination for thousands of Twin Cities residents, and a home for many dozens of like-minded, high-integrity bodywork professionals. Through the good work of its fluid staff, the Back Rub has developed into one of the most innovative business models in the country for therapeutic bodywork delivery. From the most recent walk-in clients new to intention-based therapeutic massage to their oldest decades-long friends whom they cherish, the Great Metropolitan Back Rub is fundamentally demonstrating to the business community and the world at large that honoring relationships and eliminating competition are good for everyone, including business itself. Annette is grateful to the thousands of customers and hundreds of staff who, over the years, have helped to build the Great Metropolitan Back Rub into the Twin Cities therapeutic bodywork leader. It has been gratifying for me to witness the evolution of this growing industry by bringing new therapies to the public. And I say me because I have known Annette since 1998. And she has been a tremendous support. She's been an instrumental company within the massage business. She's trained thousands of massage therapists, and she believes that it's been the client's willingness to try new experiences and enjoy the results that has forged a new path for therapeutic bodywork for the future of all humanity. I think that the work that you're doing now is really helping the healthcare system innovate and become more effective in integrating therapeutic massage in traditional medical practices.
Well, I'm glad you see it that way, because that certainly is our goal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great.
Thanks. Well, the back rub is on the front lines of the medical system, even though massage therapy isn't really taken seriously as a medical part of the medical model. Most people end up coming into bodywork because they're in so much pain and the allopathic medical system hasn't found an answer for them. And so that's when they come to us, and that's when we start them on their path towards wellness, and not just using bodywork, but referring them to other forms of therapy that are also not included in the allopathic system of medicine. And so people will be referred out for acupuncture and nutritional therapy and naturopathic and homeopathic referrals of all kinds, different practitioners. So, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So, but every one of the best things about body workers, most of us anyway, is that we are also on a wellness path. And so we have a lot of skills and a lot of resources and a lot of contacts where and a lot of information and the ability to think through somebody's problems and perhaps make a recommendation that they wouldn't get anyplace else.
Yeah. And you've got these home remedies that I have been encouraging you to put in a book.
I do have a personal cache of home remedies.
Oh, right? My gosh. You're always coming up with stuff, you know, if you get the sniffles or working with your dad. And
right. Well, I think it's interesting that I was just saw a meme on Facebook last week that said, you know, that it all started with home remedies, herbs and roots and stuff, and everybody was using herbs and roots. And then physicians came along and started dosing with what they called, what did they call them? Well, they called them, well, they were dosing. That's exactly the word that they used. So it was something they could sell, right? And so then the roots and the herbs didn't mean anything because they were creating this thing that was called dosing and that people could buy, but they had no idea what was inside of it. And that began a couple hundred years ago. And it has evolved into very synthetic, very dangerous pharmaceuticals that are plaguing our nation in millions of ways, including causing cancer, but also causing people to go crazy, literally, because of the doses of, literally, the dosing now has become so synthetic. And now we're back to herbs and roots again. If you really want to get well, you're going to find somebody who can recommend nutrients, herbs and roots, plants, food,
grounding, know, going inward.
Exactly.
Yeah. Meditation. Right. Yeah.
How can I calm down? How can I resource my inner wisdom instead of feeling like I need a physician to tell me what's wrong with me? And, you know, how can I start listening again and stop expecting one little pill to fix me?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I feel like I know it feels like a stretch, but that's what the bodywork industry brings people to, because inevitably, when you get a massage, you are much more aware of what's going on inside of you than you've ever been before. And I think that's part of the reason why it's been hard for people to get to massage therapy, because massage therapy, it's not that it was inaccessible, it's that it was always kind of in the closet. So one of the reasons why I started the back rub was because massage therapy was in the closet. And in Minneapolis, where I was practicing, you couldn't even get a license. They actually just got a licensing process down in Minneapolis like 2 years ago, something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought all this time it was licensed.
No, and even the state of Minnesota doesn't have a licensing process for massage therapy. And so in order for people to practice, what they were doing was, instead of hanging out a shingle, they were opening up a room in their house, inviting people into their personal space, and making that safe for them. So when I started the back rub in 1995, there were only five or six massage businesses listed in the yellow pages at that time. And the back rub was one of them. We were in Calhoun Square. I had two chairs, a rug and a chalkboard, and a couple of willing therapists who were interested in bringing massage therapy to people out in public in the middle of Calhoun Square. So if you've been to Calhoun Square and you remember the olden days when we were in the middle of, oh, by the way, this is just a little cultural reference just for fun. But Prince did include the back rub in Calhoun Square in one of his songs.
Oh, so, really? Which one?
The song called Calhoun Square, or Calhoun Square, I think is what it's called.
Oh.
And, yeah, it's very
I'm
obscure
gonna have to
song
look it
on
up.
One of his albums, but... but yeah, I mean, it was really kind of iconic in a way because we were in the middle of the mall. We were doing chair massage right by the up escalator. So people would be riding the up escalator and we'd be working on people and the person in the chair would be like, you know, like just hanging there on the chair. So right. Grateful that somebody was working on them. And people going up the escalator, you could hear them going, wow, you know. But body work affects everybody all around us. And some of the clients that came to us back in 1995 are still clients of the back rub. They still come in and they often talk about it. I was there at the beginning, you know, so.
Right. And I remember, you wrote your first business plan.
Yeah.
When you joined one of the We Mentor mentoring groups.
Well, because I wasn't making any money, right? And I wanted to open an inline store. I thought that was the answer to making money was I'm going to get out of the middle of the mall. I'm going to stop doing – well, I was going to still do chair massage for a while, but I was going to move, you know, kind of to the next level. And I did that, and that was when I met you because it didn't work that way. I opened an inline store, and I still wasn't making money. Now, we were doing really well, but I wasn't making money. And so –
you were paying everybody else.
Yeah, I was paying everybody else, but I wasn't paying myself. And so I had a lot of growing to do because oddly enough, the reason why you go into the healing ministry of any kind is because you want to help people. And typically that means that you're willing to work for nothing. And that's exactly where I was. So I worked for 2 years in my business without getting paid unless I was actually working on people. So there was no point in having a business because I was working on people enough hours to pay my own life, you know, my own needs, to get my own needs met. And then I also had to work.
Yeah, because you were a single mom.
Right. I was a single mom. And then I also had to work at the bookkeeping and all of that to make everybody else's lives work. So I was working not just, you know, not just for myself in that moment, but absolutely for everybody else with very little coming back to me, almost nothing. So then I met Nancy and I went to my first We Mentor peer mentoring group and I met people who were having success in business.
Yeah.
And weirdly, that blew my mind because here I was in Calhoun Square and everybody around me was successful in business. I mean, more or less. I mean, there were stores closing here and there, you know, based on different things, but you know, there was a successful optical shop and there was a successful knickknack shop and a successful shoe store. And, you know, it was actually a great place to be because there was a lot of camaraderie, a lot of support. We felt like we were all in it together. And it was really a huge challenge. So,
yeah. And you had explored the idea of franchising at one point.
I did.
Yeah. And
everybody was franchising at that time. I mean, it was just like everything was busting wide open. And somebody had told me that my model would be a good model to duplicate.
Yeah.
And so I started going down that route. But interestingly enough, as I was moving down it, I started getting very stressed out about it. And it was because there was an enormous amount of work that would have to happen that I would have to do. So investors maybe were willing to invest in my franchise, but it really meant that I had to give up my life and my kids for a couple of years. You know, that was really the way it was outlined to me. And I really didn't go into business so that I could get – I actually literally went into business because I wanted to have time with my kids.
Yeah.
And so starting down the path of not having time for my kids was not going to work for me. So I backpedaled. I got out of it. And I opened up a second store instead, interestingly, just before the Twin Towers went down. No, just after the Twin Towers went down, I signed the lease on it and – just before the recession hit in 2001. Was that 2002? Anyway, I opened up a second store myself, and then I found out what it's like to own two stores. And so So it's fast. So I start out in the center of the mall with a chair and a rug and the chalkboard. The next thing I know, I've got an inline store and a $36,000 loan that I have to pay off, and I'm still not making money. And then thinking, how did I not learn this lesson? I thought, well, I'll open a second store. You're right.
Yeah.
And then worked harder and made less money. I mean, I was doing okay. I actually was really doing okay, but I was working really, really hard.
Absolutely. So, and you bought a house, and I mean,
yeah, I actually bought a second house at that point. I moved. I had bought. I mean, buying a house originally was what pulled me out of poverty, because so this is true. When I started my business, I actually was living in poverty. And by poverty, I mean that I literally was relying on the government to support me and my kids. And I really, there were so many things that I didn't like about it, you know, even though it felt really safe in some ways. But, you know, the amount of money that the county and the federal government give to women, single women with babies, hasn't changed in all of that time. It was 1995 when I started my business and got off welfare. At that time, if you had one child, they would give you $432 a month plus $165 a month in food stamps for you and that child. And or any other, you know, and then they'd add a little bit for each child that you had home. That amount remains today. Exactly the same amount of money is given to women right now. If they need public assistance. And so at the time, Clinton was in office, and he did what any good Democrat would do. He pitched all these women off of welfare. I saw it happening. They were they had just reformulated their idea about what people should be doing with their lives, and we should be pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps. So, you know, that wasn't beyond me, because you know, I mean, I was a college-educated woman. I grew up in the suburbs. I grew up around wealthy people. I knew what wealthy people did. Wealthy people weren't on public assistance. I didn't really want to do that anymore. And so—
Because your dad was a business owner too, right?
My dad was a business owner, yeah. So weirdly, I was able to buy a house at that time because there was a lot of public assistance for buying a house. So I gauged it right. I bought my house— And then I started my business, and then I got off welfare, and then I made a little bit of extra money, and I was able to get a loan, and I started an inline store, and I was in line at Calhoun Square for 7 years. And during the recession, when that first recession hit, I for some reason opened up a second one.
The dot-com bust, you mean?
During the dot-com, no, when everything went down after the Twin Towers went down.
That year, everything went down. Do you remember? I had my last strategy workshop at the Marsh.
Yes, yes,
right?
I remember that.
Karen Kunzman. Yeah,
as the towers were crashing and falling.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And we were like not knowing what was going on, and they pulled a TV out. So in between when we had a break in the workshop, we could go out and see what was going on. And then it was like, okay, either people are going to stay or some people are going to leave. And you were like, I got to get my kids.
I got to go get my kids.
Yeah. I need to, you know, make sure they're safe.
Well, it turned out that they were closing the schools anyway. So I was really glad I left, because otherwise they wouldn't have been able to reach me. But
yeah. Okay.
But it really took us all. I mean, anybody who was there when the Twin Towers went down, remember that the economy just was shattered in one fell blow.
Everyone I've spoken with, their business changed.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
many of them stopped.
Well, one of the things that happened after the Twin Towers went down was that, and this was nationwide, shopping malls really, really took a big hit. And since I was in a shopping mall, I knew I needed to get out.
Yeah.
And so every month my sales were going down by percentages, whole percentages, you know, 4-5%, 6-7%. People were not coming back, and it looked like we weren't going to make it. So my lease was up, and I bailed. I invested in upgrading to a store on the street, because for some reason those were doing better. And so it seemed like that was just the way things were going. So I literally was just across the street from where I was at Calhoun Square, and you know, it still took me 3 years to build my business back up after that happened. Wow. At the same time, weirdly, I signed that lease on the outside of Calhoun Square. I also signed a lease in Highland Park in St. Paul on a little store that I had my eye on for a year and a half or 2 years, because I would drive by it or walk by it quite a bit when I was in Highland Park. And I had always wanted it. It was just the perfect size, a little store. And so it came up for rent and I snapped it up. And so I had my dream, you know, of two stores as the economy was completely cascading.
Yeah. You know? Somehow it all came together for you.
Somehow it all came together. Well, you wait those things out, you know. But really, the massage industry took a huge hit because people were not only not going into shopping malls, but they weren't spending money on themselves and they weren't buying things. So the economy was really, really tanking in a big way. Sister Rosalind Jeffries had a school at that time, if people probably know who she is. They were doing Saints games, chair massage, her school, the students were doing it at the Saints games. And she had an outcall business between her school, the Saints games, and her outcall business where they were doing corporate massage. Her business was worth more than $8 million a year. And a year later, after the Twin Towers went down, she was closing her school or facing closing her school and had zero income, like none. So that's what we were all facing.
Yeah.
Now, what I feel like I had on my side was that I was accustomed to being poor. So not having money didn't always really slay me. I mean, I was used to being poor. And I know that in business, and my parents were poor because my dad was in business. And so I was used to that. I grew up with that. So I knew that if you stuck it out, you know, my dad survived probably 7 recessions, you know, with his little frame shop.
Yeah.
And so.
So he has a frame shop in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Well, he did.
He did. Yeah. Because we have a lot of listeners around the world.
Oh,
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad he had 2 frame shops. One was in Minnetonka and one was in St. Paul. And my mother stressed about the money the whole time I was growing up, and she'd talk about it and she'd pace the house and she'd yell at us because she was upset. And, you know, I mean, I was very familiar with how hard it was being. I'm not exactly sure why I decided to start a business after knowing how hard it was, because my mother used to say that. Well, actually, I did everything the opposite of what my mother told me to do, including, she said, don't marry an Italian. I did that. She said, don't start a business. And I did that. And so, but anyway, yeah, I was used to it. So I figured that if all of the rest of the massage industry was going down, that if I didn't close, that people would come back, because they had, you know, at that point, well, that was 2002 to 2003.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, I had already been open. I opened in 1995. So, you know, I was 8 years into it. So I had 8 years of clientele. And then the industry had been growing over the course of that 8 years. And so people were looking for a place to go. So I knew that if I kept my doors open, they would come. And it wasn't until about 2005 that it really started to tick again. But you know, we were able to make it happen. You know, we were able to make it work.
You know? So cool.
I don't know how. I spent a lot of time hiring and training and losing people. You know, it was exhausting.
So you had a lot of turnover during that time as well.
A lot of people left the industry. A lot of therapists couldn't hold out.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't hold out.
Yeah.
But at this point, I want to say that really the thing that kept the back rub, you know, literally floating during all of this time, is because we're offering body work by the minute. So during a recession, people could come in for 10 minutes and at least get 10 minutes of body work, right?
Yeah.
And so—
So people are fully clothed.
They're fully clothed.
Yeah.
And they can come in.
And you
offered
chair massage at the time.
Well, actually, by then we were doing exclusively table massage. And but we only get out the chair now if somebody can't lay down. But I started doing table massage in 1999 because one of my clients said, you know what, could I lay down? And I said, well, okay, let's try that. And it worked. People liked it. People preferred to lie down, which really surprised me. But it turns out to be the truth. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you do this, but during the course of my workday, sometimes I think, if I could just lay down for a little while and get some space, you know, just like leave me alone. I just want to lay down. And we do see a lot of people who come in and they just need to de-stress.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So,
well, I think this is a good stopping point.
Okay.
Wow. Right? You've been through a lot with your business and your passion behind it to keep the perspective and to keep going. And I don't know, I've just always admired you for your dedication to the industry. It's really incredible. So we'll continue talking about the massage industry and how you grew the business. You continue to grow and shift and move and transition.
And innovate.
And innovate. And lead. Innovate and innovate.
Exactly.
So we'll take off after 2005.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And if you haven't, June 19th, put it on your calendar. Shoot me an email, nancy@wementor.com.
Meet Annette while you're there.
Yeah, right. Annette's going to be there. That's right. Cool. All right. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, Annette, for being here and being so open about the trials and tribulations of business ownership.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, brother from another mother. Thank you for all you do. Okay. We'll see you next week, everybody.